It is Friday, November 15th. I'm Todd Maffin. Today, while I'm still out of the country, I wanted to bring you an episode from another outstanding podcast in our space. It's called The Founders Forum. It's hosted by Edward Hermawan, owner of Snapik, and Tristram Dyer, the CEO of Webtopia. Together, they meet with senior marketers and DTC media buyers to talk about what's been working in the last month or two in the e-commerce and digital ad space. In this episode, Andrew Foxwell, who runs the Foxwell Founders Community, sits down with Edwin and Trist to talk through their thoughts about Q4, Black Friday coming up, along with a few trends that they are seeing in the media buying community. I have been a member of the Foxwell Founders Group since its inception. It's full of really solid practitioners. You can learn more about it at our affiliate link. That's todayindigital.com/founders. I will be back with you Monday for a marketing science deep dive episode on the role of Schadenfreude in marketing. Until then, enjoy this special episode.
Welcome to the Founders Forum podcast, brought to you by the Foxwell Founders, where we interview some of the hottest minds in D2C right now and deep dive on their area of expertise. Everyone that we interview here is a cherished member of our Foxwell Founders community of over 550 advertisers worldwide and are at the cutting edge of what is working right now. I hope you enjoy this, and if you have any questions, feel free to let me know. Andrew at Foxwell Digital. And now let's get stuck into this week's episode. Here are Edwin and Tris, our hosts.
Hi guys, welcome back to the Foxwell Founders Forum. I'm Tris, this is Edwin, and we're here with Andrew, the host, the owner of Foxwell Founders Group. We're here today in Amsterdam, the day after the Foxwell Founders meetup. What a day and a night. My voice is not going too hot right now, but listen, we're going to roll. We're going to talk a lot today. A couple of hot takes, a couple of pieces of advice for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and just, you know, generally chill out and find out what Andrew's got on his mind. So strap in, let's go.
So what's going to happen in Q4?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of different things that can happen. I think it's definitely going to continue the record of being the biggest, you know, that we've ever had in terms of e-commerce online. I don't think there's going to be any change there.
I've sent that same email every year. This year's going to be the biggest.
Yeah,
biggest,
it's the best. Biggest. Simply the biggest.
That's amazing. I mean, I think wonderful. If you think about it from a meta advertiser perspective, the thing what's going to happen in Q4 is going to be the continuation of not having separate assets. Number one, you're going to basically be utilizing, I think, mostly your existing assets that are your best performing creatives throughout the year.
Making changes
through on the site instead.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is going to be huge.
We saw a lot last year that we kind of, after the end of October, we didn't really produce many more new creatives.
Yeah.
We just don't need them. You've got the stuff that's working, you've got the data behind it, social proof. Why would you? You can put in some Black Friday stuff, but it's never going to be performing as well as anything, you know, that you have already been using.
Yeah. And I think you'll continue to see the difference of, you know, it used to be that so many of the sales, like the majority of the sales came on the Thursday, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday with a little bit of a lull.
Yeah.
And then there'd be the Monday would hit again. I think you'll still see spikes. You'll still see that. But I do think that the overall event is going to be spread out.
Yeah.
So if you are going to say, hey, I'm going to launch this in like earlier or the month of November or what, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You're going to, like, consumers are ready to buy, and the consideration process is such that, you know, they're going to be okay with thinking about it and coming back, and maybe they will buy to see if the deal gets better on Black Friday, Cyber Monday time frame exactly.
Yeah.
But if the deal is like, this is the deal, and you say that and you honor that and you don't change it, because I think that can really tick people off, then I think probably that's a good method, and that's something we'll continue to see.
One thing that we've seen in the trends of this year is that we've been seeing people waiting and waiting and waiting until the sales. So we've actually seen the bigger anticipation for these sales.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
It's been more consolidated though this year. In previous years gone by, back in COVID years, it was kind of like a gray week rather than a Black Friday.
Right.
Now this year, you know, Labor Day, or 4th of July, anything like that, they've all been very heavy hitting days.
Yeah.
And then the last days of those sales have just been 3x.
Yeah.
Like jumped.
I think that's big. I think if you think about it through the lens of cost controls, you know, I think you're going to have it.
Let's not talk about cost controls. Oh my.
I think you're going to have a certain selection of people that are going to keep the cost control similar or a little bit higher.
Yeah.
And then they'll just ride it out and raise budgets. Like if the inventory is there and they're going to hit it, then it's okay. Mm-hmm. I think that majority of folks will have some campaigns or a large percentage of campaigns, probably more like existing customer style campaigns that are going to be utilizing like a one-day click. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good. We used to mess with bidding all the time, right? Oh, we used to do bid overrides and everything many years ago. We would do like a $10 click bid to make
this
sure
is
we
true.
Won.
I learned it from you.
Yeah. And it was great, right? And we did that. And then I think we kind of went off of that because it just wasn't working anymore.
You didn't need it.
And you didn't need it. The system was a lot smarter. So I think, you know, in terms of how you're planning it for Q4, like how you're thinking about it, making sure that you are covering your bases when it comes to bid cost, like kind of cost controls, I think is smart. I don't think you want to have it all on cost controls. I don't think you want to have it all on auto. Mm-hmm. I don't think you want to have it all on one day click. Like, I think it's going to be a mixture of those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Would be my guess. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, the one of the biggest things we're seeing this year is actually our ASE campaigns are really taking off. But one of the kind of the when you talk about cost controls and kind of the different types of campaigns, we're finding ASE working super, super well just for scaling.
Like, so
we've done a lot of testing in ABO, getting our creatives built out like that, and then just moving that winning creative into the ASEs.
Yeah, I mean, my big thing with ASE and my big thing with generally like the AI that Meta continues to put forward is I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I think that when an ASC works, it works really well. Yeah. But the issue is it's just not consistent.
Yeah.
And I think when you add the Advantage Plus brand umbrella and blanket across like a whole bunch of things,
mm-hmm. it's horrible.
It's so challenging. It's horrible. It's like it's not reliable.
Yeah.
And it also there's a certain percentage of it, let's say 20%, that just like gives you headaches and makes your job as an advertiser way harder.
Yeah.
And even if you're in-house, that makes your job to tell the boss is sending you a screenshot on Christmas or on Thanksgiving, hey, why does this ad look like this? Yeah. You know, like that's insane. And so I think Meta's job is always to make your job easier. That should be the
goal.
And that's really the premise that they've been pushing. Mm. But I think it's just like anything else. I think that there are accounts when you can go all in and spend, if you're spending $1 million a month, and go all in on cost controls with ASC, and that can work.
Yeah.
But for the large majority of people that sit in the 20,000 US a month to 100,000 US a month in spend.
Yeah.
There's more nuance to how you have to build an account, and it can't be just all in one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I did because I honestly, I just don't trust it. And it's just like a relationship.
You don't trust.
You know, where you're like, you've told me before that you were going to be here at 8, but you've been late. Like before.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Okay. You know, it's like you told me you were going to go to the store before you came, but then
why
you didn't.
You hurt me?
Yeah. Like, why did you hurt me? And so like that. Yeah. It's just like, I think that's the kind of thing. It's like, you know, Zuckerberg's going out. What did he say in last earnings call? He's like, we would love, or he's like, it'll be a situation where you'll be able to put in the creative assets and press play. And honestly, I would love that to be the case.
It doesn't work.
I would love that to be a marketer's case that we would be able to say, yes, we can trust this process and it can move us into being general marketers, continuing to work on the total funnel, client financials, and really helping and being a CMO or like that kind of relationship. But we still have to maintain that advertiser side because I just don't think it's trustworthy at this moment in time.
A test we're starting to do now is we're breaking out, and this is old school, we're breaking out different placements. So we now, instead of
you're
having
breaking out different placements, what are we in 2021?
No.
What is this
school?
You're doing reels.
But reels only. So what we're doing
reels
is
only
auto, because look, our Facebook rep said to us, hey, you know, auto placement, baby. And we're like, nope. Yeah, we're seeing terrible results here.
I'm surprised you even picked up the call from your Facebook rep.
we're forced to. But what we're doing now is we're putting on a reels only, and we're going testing reels only. What we're finding is it works really, really well in that size when you're spending kind of 20 grand. But if you're going upwards from that, if you're starting to spend even more, it doesn't have enough people to serve it to. Mm-hmm. So it then starts to scrape the barrel and the performance really starts to dip.
Yeah.
But if you're spending that lower bit and you're looking for a bit more incrementality, then you're sorted. That's going to work
really
well.
It's really interesting. You know, I think reels is an example book. I was talking about this to a bank that I consult with about Meta's company, about the stock, and they were asking about reels, you know, where it was, where it is. You know, it's like 3 or 4 years ago, it was just garbage. I mean, it just wasn't anything. Mm. Even 2 years ago, and it was like showing pictures of like women in bikinis on Lamborghini. on Lamborghinis, right? And you're like, okay, this isn't like my con. This isn't like my type of content. But it would show me. Yeah, it would like show me all this stuff that just wasn't relevant to me. I remember once I went on Reels and showed me like videos of a monster truck rally. I was like, do you know me? Yeah. Like, this isn't me. Anyway, and so, and like now it's like pretty
true.
Yeah.
It's like
women in bikinis.
Yeah.
Monster trucks.
Yeah. It's a lot like
you guys are finding out a lot.
And it's a lot like, it just wasn't the right thing. And now it seems to be really relevant. And so now it's interesting in terms of like continuing to be bullish on Meta in terms of the profitability. You know, if we look at Threads, now we're all, it's something we joke about. We just do the same thing with Reels. And I think that Threads is going to be a more an opportunity for us to continue to do that. Mm-hmm. And I do think that creating creative, which is, I mean, this isn't my idea. This is something that I learned from Dave Herman talking about it, of like just doing Reels centered creative and having that be what you're making in a 4x5 and then having be the way that you're putting all the creative out there.
Yeah.
I think we've done things similarly to that, but that's one of those things that you're like, that's kind of what we've been doing. So the validity
of
him saying that makes me feel good of like trust. And I think that's been really useful. So I would do that more in Q4, honestly, too.
Absolutely. But so give us actionable, like quick tips, like let's do a top five. Let's say we're spending 20 to 100K. And then let's say we were big spenders, like
in Q4, top five.
In Q4.
Like, what are you going to do?
Oh, yeah. Actionable tips.
Yeah. I mean, I think one, like you definitely never want to forget about the people that have purchased from you before and your email list and utilizing that. I think that's big. I think that there's been a movement in a lot of us away from utilizing retargeting in any sort of sense necessarily.
True.
And just like there's either you don't do it as much and you know Meta's naturally doing it, or you know, you're generally not advertising those people as just is not part of the campaign. Like you're doing no retargeting, basically.
The marketing manager is trying to say, well, I can get that in SMS and email.
Or like Meta's doing enough of it and I don't need to do it separately.
Yeah.
I think
so
that
bring
this
us
is
back into retargeting.
I think this is something that, like, you know, engaged, at least engaged audiences, email list, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that that is useful in Q4.
Okay.
I mean, for a lot of reasons, but I think it's useful because you just want to get in front of those people. I'm not saying that necessarily it might be the most. It might be that they're going to see it and convert on Facebook, but being visible to them in another place other than just the inbox is going to be useful.
Sure.
And you've been, you know, working to build out those people for a long time. Like, even if you're talking about like a 95% view on some sort of a video.
Yeah.
That's, I think, worthwhile to get in front of.
How much are you spending? Like, how much of your budget are you spending on that?
Oh, I'd say that's probably like in the 20% range.
Okay.
Like 10 to 20% Whoa. Range. 20%. I would
20%.
Say. But it's
that's,
I mean,
big like his sombrero on his mic.
It's an ice cream cone.
20% is
a chocolate ice cream cone. But I mean,
how do you justify that when they say that, when like, how do you kind of get the checks and balances when it comes to the email marketing and the SMS, and they're like, well, we're gonna buy it that way. They're gonna be
I think this is like anything else with Meta or with like our world in general, is like, it depends. And I think it's
those words.
Yeah, it's like if you know that you've been running videos all year long, and you have these videos that have like that are good storytelling, or they're an us versus them, or they're a founder story, and you can do a 95% view off of them.
Yeah.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. Or even a total through play. That makes a lot of sense to hit those people. And depending on the audience size, like if you haven't really talked to them and it hasn't been part of the strategy before this, then I think spending, maybe not 20, but maybe 10 to 20. I mean, like, I think I could be as high as this because you really just haven't touched them before.
Okay.
So I think that's why I say that number, why it could be as high. I tend to think that we all think prospecting is a little bit easier than it actually is, in especially the Black Friday, Cyber Monday timeframe. So to sort of hedge your bets as an advertiser overall, I think it's smart to have at least some of that that's considered to talk to those previous people. So you're not having all of your chips on the, we're going to prospect during the most competitive time of the year. Yeah. And it's going to do great.
And you have to remember, it's election year. So CPMs are going to be naturally high anyway, because it's election year.
Yeah.
So right up into the, it's a week before you have to stop. Is it a week before they have to stop advertising?
Yeah.
So up until just the end of October, CPMs are going to be super high compared to what we would normally see, October being super low CPMs. So you're going to see that, and you're going to have to work it out. One thing that you mentioned there, it kind of brings back to a testing thing that we've seen as well. people previously, when they're excluding from their top of funnel campaigns, they exclude existing customers and sometimes even engagers.
Yeah.
But now we just turn that part off the engagers and just target, exclude purchasers.
Wait,
so you're not showing to people who've just bought.
Let me just ask a question. Did you say that they have to stop advertising? Because I don't think they have to stop advertising in America before the election. Is that a thing that became true?
I cut it.
They have to have their ads like 4 weeks before. They can't launch new ads.
Okay.
4 weeks before the election. So
the political ads.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why I didn't know this.
Stop. Huh. They can't run them on the 5th.
You can't run them on election day.
What? That's un-American.
I'd have to double.
Yeah, it seems. Yeah.
That seems very.
It seems like you can do it.
Any ads that you're going to run for election, have to be launched 4 weeks before. They will not allow any ads to be launched in that 4 week window.
Oh wow, interesting. Okay,
interesting, yeah.
I guess I never knew that. Even though I used to be in the political world, I never knew that. Interesting. Yeah, but anyway,
not on Twitter though.
No. Well, you're going to be launching ads on the 4th.
On X.
Yeah, on X. Yeah, I would say that's one. Is like, don't forget about those folks.
Yeah.
I would say another one is generally having a mix of campaign and audience type, I think is going to be useful.
Okay, what's the mix?
And I mean, I'm not... If I was doing it, I would obviously want to make sure that there's some kind of an ASC involved in what we're doing. And that's predominantly like what I would... If the ASC has worked previously in that account, that's what I would just keep on rolling, and I really wouldn't change much.
Yeah. Okay.
Like if I have top performing things, I would just keep that going.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the ASC, and I honestly wouldn't touch it.
Okay.
Like really.
Yeah.
That would be one.
And I was going to ask, is there plenty of people out there that will get the question? Was like, well, it's kind of off season or anything else. Like, well, it's working. It's still working in late October. Don't turn it off. Either.
Yeah.
Late off season.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it. I would, in terms of like this setup itself, I would think that you generally moving away from broad during this period of time, I think is a good thing. And the reason, the reason I would say that is because the competition is so high that when you're really what you're looking for in adding other audiences or any other spend to your campaign, if broad has previously worked in your account, I think there's a validity to running it.
Yeah.
But if it hasn't, if it's been like, we've launched it and it kind of went like up and down.
Yeah.
I think really what you're looking for across the campaign mix is you're trying to find something that's going to be incremental to add to the campaign.
Mm.
And that would be things like an interest stack
or
high relevance lookalikes, because they're going to be sort of short run bursts. I'm not saying these are going to be things that you're going to depend on long term, but they're going to be things that in a 2 week period around Black Friday, Cyber Monday, that's going to be like, they're going to be little 10% incremental wins, right?
Yeah.
That's really what I think with top performers that you would want to be looking for. I would think you're probably mostly operating in an ABO format too. I don't think you're necessarily operating in a CBO format.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, yesterday we're here the founders, you know, day after the founders learning sessions yesterday at the meetup, and Freddie from Germany mentioned Frederick Rode that they're utilizing CBO a lot.
Yeah,
I think that a lot of the advice
like it inhale at that time.
I mean, and I think you always have to put that in context. In context, this is German advertiser that they're advertising for in Germany. And I think that when you look at countries, if you're looking at, you know, advertising only in a certain area, and this tight geographic area, specifically like only the UK or whatever, I think there's validity in doing a CBO likely, like, because it'll operate differently than it would in the United States. A lot of the advice that I have is because of the accounts we run and because of always being a US centric advertiser.
Yeah.
But I think there's nuance to that. So I think if you're in a smaller country where you're targeting a smaller set of geographic places, maybe not the US, certainly a CBO could be part of that, but most likely in what we're going to be doing is like, it's going to be more of an ABO format. I'd say that's big. I think you're going to be wanting to not necessarily create brand new stuff like we talked about. You're going to keep running the best creative that you've had. Maybe you're going to have a couple new things that are 4 to 5 real style that are going to be to those previous customers or those people on the engaged lists or on your email list or whatever that you've gone through. One thing I'll just say about the email list is that Klaviyo integration freaking breaks all the time.
Yeah.
So just make sure before you do this that you check that the Klaviyo integration is actually working.
Yeah. And keep checking it. Check it again.
Because it's like that shit busts all the time.
Yeah.
And then, so that's another one I would think that you're trying to, you would want to go for. And I think, if you've been running cost controls before, you'd keep that. But I think that's kind of the setup that I would be looking at. I think that you're making generally less changes than you would. Yeah. I think really what you, from an overall standpoint, that you want to be looking at is how quickly can we bring these people to a purchase and what are the things we can do on the site and really auditing the customer journey before you go forward on it. These are things like the cart drawer, right? Or like, how does that look on mobile? How quickly are you going to, are they going to see an incentive? You know, because so many times, you know, you walk through your client site and you've seen it and it makes sense to you or they've seen it, but having reviews or having other people look at it is just so critical to actually making that time successful.
Would you even advise to go as far as put Hotjar or something like that on it to have a look?
I mean,
people do it.
I mean, I think you certainly could during the period of time that you're testing, right? I mean, especially, you know, you get it out in October, you could get some learnings on it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Even if it's only though to five people and you're asking them to go through of all different of your main customer base that are friends of yours or something else, what's confusing about this or whatever. I think that's work that we didn't necessarily used to talk about because we were in the spoiled days of like, let's launch an ad and then we'll run it to a PDP and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore.
I just want to give you a correction.
Okay.
So on the political ads, it's 1 week before.
Okay.
Ads can launch.
Okay.
1 week before.
Okay.
Day of, it's historically that political ads do not run because campaigns choose not to, but they can.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it was a thing they don't generate. I think they almost like a parlay when they say like, we're not doing it. So
they just, for the US, they made the restriction of, 1 week before, no one can add to March.
Interesting. There you go. Okay. So we got two so far. We need a third and a fourth and a fifth advice.
Third and fourth advice. I mean, I think, you know, generally, let's just get into the third one that's not necessarily like setup related, but I think is in terms of like your setup related, which is, how are you going to
bring my mind and my body?
Correct. Your mind and your body.
Mind and body.
Get your mind right. You know, like how
are you meditating?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that during this period of time when things are really intense, one of the things that you have is sunk cost bias, right? You're going to keep working on the same thing and you think that it makes it more productive.
Okay.
I think you want to be aware of that continuing to work on a client problem, if it's an issue or there's some sort of thing, it actually stepping away for an hour will give you clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really easy to like could it be glued during that period of time because everybody else is talking about how they're glued to it and showing Shopify screenshots and shit like that. But my point is like, I do think that it's necessary today because there inevitably will be things that go wrong to have a plan for like, what am I going to do to keep myself sane during this period of time?
Take a fucking walk.
Yeah. Right.
Like grass.
Take a walk. Yeah,
like, I think that is really important. And I think that a lot of it in the last couple of years, I think, has been focusing on the planning beforehand so that during the actual event of BFCM, it's like you're in a more relaxed state.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that is something you want to just have like generally like a Q4 self-care plan. I think that's important.
Yeah, that's absolutely key. And I would say as well, just on that, is like even if you're like, oh, I'm fine, I can get through it, you'll tell yourself you're fine. Putting it in, schedule it into your diary to go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Look at yourself in advance because it's so easy to give yourself that bias of like, I feel fine.
Yeah.
But then you're in the middle of something. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And I mean, the landing page thing, that can't be the fourth one.
No. Oh, yeah. It can't be.
So that's one of them.
But I mean, the offer one that Jenny Lind was talking about, yes, is pretty big. So like,
yeah. Right, but let's talk about it.
Yeah. So I mean, it was pretty big. And
wait, is this number four or number five?
This is number five.
This is number five.
Yeah. Quote of the day yesterday was obviously the one from Jenny Lind where she said, we can't scale products, we can scale offers. And that's obviously really hit home for me because there's so many people trying to get out there being like, got a product here and getting the landing page to perfection within an inch of its life, but actually no one's buying it because there's no reason to buy. It doesn't have to be an offer like a 2-for-1 or something like that. It just has to be a reason for somebody to actually buy without Facebook ads. So, so many people look at Facebook ads and go, oh, that's the magic bullet.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, if people aren't buying anyway, you're wasting your money. You're just going to send it to more people.
Yeah. That's so true. You know, I think I really appreciate you bringing that up because it's one of the journeys that I have had to beyond, I think, over the last few years as a Facebook marketer, that, I mean, generally a Meta marketer, I've been doing this for since they've been invented. I got spoiled focusing, like a lot of us did, only on Meta ads. And I think so much of it, obviously the offer is a massive part of it. You know, CRO, landing pages is a whole other part of it. And so looking at the offer, it's like, it's almost should be number one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but I mentioned it last because in my head, I'm always like thinking about the tactical side of it.
Yeah.
But I think that, the offer itself is massive. It's huge. I mean, what are you going to put out there? It's meaningful. You know, I mean, in our Q4 course that we sold before, we don't have it anymore, but, we talked about in there doing like a meaningful offer. Mm-hmm. People are always like, do you think 10% is meaningful?
I'm
like, no. And also like,
no
when, if, when, and also like, if you never do a sale, maybe 10% is interesting, but still like, even from the favorite brand, if you offer me 10%, I'd be like, it's kind of rizzle dizzle.
Yeah.
No.
It's not
10% of your email. Like, you get 10% off for adding your email address.
It's like, so it's like, you know, kind of thinking about that. Like, what does that really mean? You know, the companies that really, I think, have been successful that I've seen and have been really inspired by are those that put an element of surprise into it too.
Yeah.
You know, mystery boxes that are coming with stuff, showing what could be in it, making that process fun. And I think is a huge part of it too, in terms of this specific like time frame,
mm-hmm.
right? Of like, what else are they getting that's fun and interesting? And maybe, yeah, two for one. I don't know if that's useful, but it's like incentivizing them to buy in volume is another piece that I think can be really powerful.
Absolutely.
But I think the offer, I think, you know, it's a good shout to bring that up.
I think the biggest thing that people miss though is they kind of go, oh, what percent do I need to give off? And they talk to their
30.
CFO. Yeah. Well,
30.
Yeah, I get it, right? They talk to a CFO. CFO's like, that's all of our margin.
I hate the CFO.
Yeah, don't we all?
throw them out the window.
until the IRS comes knocking. Friend.
Huh?
But no, what we find is, the best performing in terms of sales and anything like that and an offer is value added. So if you're adding more value, whatever it is, keep the same price but add more value. Yes, your margin is going to go down the same.
Yeah.
They're going to get more. So they're used to spending that amount.
Yeah.
Because you have to remember, you're acquiring a lot of customers. There are new customers coming in now. You don't want them to be the poor customers that are kind of like, you're going to be relying on them to rebuy in February, March, April.
Wait, okay, guys, let's be real. Have you ever had an offer that worked better than a 30% or greater offer?
Yeah, like, all the time.
No.
All the time.
No, bro, you're on camera. Yeah. Don't lie. You're on
camera. I'll say it right to you. No, we have. And I'll tell you why it works. It works.
Well, what is it? First, tell me what it was.
It would have been value. I don't have a number,
okay,
but it would be a value add. And okay, so so say if somebody's paying $70 for something, say a pair of leggings, buying a pair of leggings.
Okay.
And it was $70 for the leggings. What we did was we threw the top in and the jumper in to make it a full outfit.
Oh.
In at the same go. Right.
It would make it
that value add. And the idea here is that obviously that's insane value. If you're buying a pair of leggings and you're getting the top as well.
Okay.
Right. But the thing is, the people, first of all, they have more stuff to wear from your product. Second of all, they're looking at it going, oh, this isn't a discount brand. I'm actually getting more from it. So it feels good. I'm coming back. I'm going to buy more. Third of all, then they're going to see that they're going to not be used to spending less. So if I go and say, I bought from your brand, I paid $30, not $70. And then, so I'm the right type of customer to be able to spend that amount anyway. So you've got three good reasons there why 30%. If you knock off 30%, it's like devaluing your brand by 30%.
Wait, and you launched with this?
No, we didn't launch with it. No, this product's been out for months and then we added some stuff in, but it worked. It's very busy airspace around here, I will say that. No, we didn't launch with it, but what we did do was we had that maybe from August, September time, and that was when it was going to become on sale anyway. So that was something that kind of coming into sales season, it was kind of autumn winter.
Okay.
It had been launched late in the summer, autumn winter stuff, end of autumn winter, and we wanted to kind of put it on sale.
I had a client once that we actually wanted to fail and they did an 80% off sale.
Holy shit.
I'm just kidding. They were shitty people and we wanted them to fail.
Okay.
They sucked. Okay. Yeah, they sucked.
Although, wouldn't that be terrible? Yeah,
there's the biggest one that I've seen.
By the way, that's not real.
No.
I'm joking.
Put the hand up on that one. Got that. But no, the what's really, we had a guy before do a lifetime offer of hoodies.
What?
For $5,000. You could be paid $5,000. I think it was 12 years of hoodies.
Okay.
You could buy it for $5,000. I think they sold three of them.
They sold three of them.
Three of them, yeah. So holy three people paid money. $5,000 for 12 year worth of hoodies.
Are they still in business?
I don't know. I haven't talked to them since.
Okay.
But what I'll say is that's just a point to say that you can put that massive offer in there, kind of anchor it in up the, like super high. So it's something to have a look at as well. But 30%, you see everything going across your whole portfolio.
30 for we've tried so many things and it's always been 30%. Like plant a tree, no, bro. Like go kick rocks. Like 25%, no. Like, but this is like, I will caveat it.
Yeah,
these are for brands that we're spending like 20 to 100K, mm-hmm. right? So it's not like super large brands. It's not performance products. It's just fashion and apparel,
mm-hmm.
right? I statistically see a difference in performance. The watershed is 30%. You do 25%?
Nah.
Kick rocks. 20%? Kick rocks. 30%? Whoa.
Up.
Like
step change?
Like statistically significant, like on my mother.
Wow. Mm. I always think dollar amounts are even more powerful than percentage sometimes.
But I dug in and I found out that this dude had not released product for 6 months.
I'll do it.
And like, and his top sellers were already sold out and he came for me.
Oh.
He came for me and he's like, why wasn't my Black Friday lit? And I was like, because you're not lit.
Yeah.
It's like, you've been not only lit, it's been lights out.
Yeah.
You haven't been doing anything.
Yeah.
But I was like, thank you, Jesus. I found out why. Yeah. Or else I would have, like, that's the rock that, like, I die on.
Yeah.
For Black Friday. Andrew, what is your hot take?
Okay. Honestly, my hot take is that people's ego gets in the way in our industry way too often.
For sure. That's not a hot take.
That's not a take hot take.
Get that out.
Well, hang on. Maybe let's dig into it a bit. Is there something you're specifically talking about? Is there Twitter beefs that you're hearing?
Give us some fighting.
I think there's people are too much in a rush to be a person of authority because their ego wants them to be like, you're smart, you're smart, you're smart. And so they go out and they try to say things really declaratively and really definitively to make other people feel small.
Oh,
yeah.
And I think that is... or confuse them. So there's a whole bunch of like complicating words and obfuscation. Mm. I think there's a certain, I'm not saying this is bad, but I think there's a certain level of person that will turn the video on themselves to record their own thoughts for the audience to hear.
Okay.
Because they think that they're of a stature that people like really want to hear from them. And here we are sitting on a podcast and me saying this, but I think ego plays a huge role in actually misguiding and misinforming a lot of people to not make their own decisions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I often think I had a friend that is not in our industry. And one time I was telling him about, you know, some of the Twitter beefs that were going on or something. And he's like, all you need to do is just keep laying bricks.
Yeah.
It's all you need to do, you know?
Over here.
So my hot take is that I think that really leads people astray. And I think that also distracts a lot of people. And ultimately it can be helpful to be on X in our industry, but that I don't think you necessarily have to be. And ultimately I think it might be better if you aren't most of the time for your mental health.
Yeah.
And for your business wealth.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When has it ever been? Bro, I've opened up X one time.
We talked
about this. I opened it up. I hadn't opened it up for a while. And I looked at Tris and I was like, bro, I feel bad about myself.
I got to shut this thing, close it, get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah. My other hot take is I think that now that I'm rolling on hot takes, another one is that a lot of the advice that you hear is needs way more context.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
You need to actually be like, okay, what country are you advertising in? Because you hear stuff from people. This is what's working. This is what's working. And it's like, that's what's working for this brand that's spending this amount in this geography.
Yeah.
And it does not apply to me in this particular thing. So I think that as an industry, like my hot take is like, add context as much as you can. Wait, it's going to be helpful.
Can we say it for real? Twitter beefs or Twitter, not Twitter beefs. But this context, what it is, people that are spending $1 million a month,
yeah,
they can't give advice. They should not give advice. They should only give advice to people that are spending $1 million a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So yeah. Different.
I can't have my dude that's not spending $1 million a month come at me with some LinkedIn article or like some tweet that from a dude that I know is he's spending $1 million a month. It's like, why aren't you doing this in my account? Yeah. Why don't you give me $1 million to spend? And I'll do it in your account.
No problem at all.
I think that's, that's huge. And like, you know, it's that. And it's also, a misunderstanding of actually the smaller accounts. They're just so much more nuanced to it. Mm. And I just think it does a huge disservice, honestly, to our industry that's it. So I think the best thing we can do is to continue to try to be like kind to one another, not like watch your ego, and to try to add context. And I think if we do that, it's big. The fourth thing I'll say on like this threat, like this idea, is I think as much as you can, and as much as people, anybody that's watching this can, the smart people that you know, smart young people that you know, or people that are looking to move careers in your life, get them involved in our industry. We need more people in our industry that are good people. You know, look at the advent of creative strategy as a job. I mean, there's a lot of people that are coming in from different parts, and I think that's been good overall for us.
Yeah.
And so the more that you can, especially if they're people of color and women, I think that's really good
every day,
because that helps us to actually market better generally as an industry, and not be just a bunch of white dudes giving ideas to each other. And so I think that in order to like be marketers for the world and be marketers for marketplaces all around, the more that we think holistically and the more that we bring in people that don't look like us, the better off our businesses will be. Because the reality is like we have to be good at marketing to people that look different than us long term, and that's going to make us more money, and that's going to make our customers more money. Just thinking about that and thinking sense. About the inherent bias that you have. So I think that's a big one that I've been certainly ruminating on recently. That's another hot take.
I think the diversity in our industry has gotten better, but it needs to get a 10x.
That. Yeah. And I'm saying, I think it's on people like us and people in our founders group or people that are watching this, you know, it's on us to be the people that are trying to make that change, to be like, cause we've been in it a long time. Yeah. Right. And I think it's on us to be like, let's try to figure that out. Let's try to bring more folks in. Mm-hmm. Cause I think that's, I just think it's good overall. Like we need more good, smart people, because ultimately some of the people we met at the founders meetup yesterday, right. They're like 10 years younger than us. Right. They're younger.
Believe it.
They're young and they're bringing fresh new ideas, because that's great. And we want that innovation and we want those new ideas. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to really move us forward.
Yeah.
That's what's going to help us continue to be ahead. Because I think, you know, you get in your job, you do the same thing for a long time. There's the blinders you have on to some degree, which is good, but you also need to continue learning from those people. I mean, I'm biased, but obviously the founders membership is a great place to do that.
What I've definitely found though yesterday is that curiosity, just that consistently innovation, the new ways of doing
that. Absolutely.
I'm running this way to do creative testing. I'm doing this way of iterating on different creative.
Yeah.
It's back to something you were saying earlier on about this ego thing. The best people in business I've ever seen can hold two things to be true.
Yeah.
What they believe and what someone else believes.
Yeah.
They don't have to tear down the other person's idea.
Yeah.
And that's where you see a lot of ego-led leaders and ego-led people tearing each other down. It's like, is it not a zero-sum game?
Well, I mean, I've really been inspired spending time with you recently over the last like week here together, of like your curiosity is a huge part of it. And Edwin, you always have that. I mean, I've learned that from you guys. I think that
meeting ex parte?
Yeah. We've been meeting behind your back. Yeah. We're looking to take over. I think that's true. I think that the curiosity piece is really, really big and will continue the innovation. So yeah, bring new people in. I think that's a good thing for all of us.
Yeah. We actually work with and this is not a plug on our side. It's literally something that we've made a conscious effort to do, is work with more female founders and female led companies.
Yeah, yeah.
And to the point now where 60% of our clients are 50% are 60% of our clients are female led founders.
Nice. That's amazing.
Which is really
good. I mean, I just think it's good for the industry overall. I mean, it's male egos. I love being around guys. I love being, you know, guy friends are great, but there's like a male ego thing that does come into play, especially when it comes to business long term, that I think is detrimental. And a lot of it, largely, actually, those of us that run marketing agencies, we're actually trying to market to women a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, facts. And so facts. It's like we need to have a more perspective in what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think the more, not just the way that we're like mirroring what's on TikTok to explain things, but also like just thinking about things from a a female-led perspective is going to be useful. And so that just means we need more women in the industry. And so go talk to your friends, get them in, tell them about creative strategy jobs, tell them about Dara Denny's course, tell them about our course, tell them, I mean, I don't care. Watch Raul Lazar's YouTube videos. You know what I'm saying? Upskill yourself. This is an industry that you can go from zero to hero pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more people know that, the better off that can be, because those of us that have been in it a while, I think that we need that to keep us going, to keep us learning, and to keep making our industries around for a really long time.
Absolutely.
Who's your favorite founder member?
Well, he has to say you now. Yeah, he said he was like happy with me.
Yeah.
The camera's rolling.
I mean, honestly, you know, the biggest thing for me that's funny is, you know, I the people in the founders group, I've just become friends with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, like it's true friendship. And it's so valuable because it's so rare that you have a friend that knows the deep side of what you actually do professionally, mm-hmm. and the nuance and the things that you carry and the things that you like hold in your bones.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so to me, the fact that we can go around the world and be in Amsterdam here and have 50 people get together, or however many were there, 50 or 60 people, and chatting and being with them. And at the end of it, we're all like giving each other hugs goodbye. You know, that to me is like so insanely beautiful and makes my heart sing. Like it's just it's great. So the people that I look at that are like true friends, you know, coming off of it, like, you know, I think about somebody, honestly, I mean, like you guys, like Phil, you guys are in this, like Phil Keel is a person, right? Like I learn from Phil all the time, and it's just because he's thinking differently. He's got different ideas. I love working with him. You know, I look at somebody like Akvila, who is an incredible leader,
really cool.
who has nice. Made a choice to be her own boss and has made a choice to run things a certain way and knows what she wants to do and knows what she doesn't want to do.
Jesus, but
and I'm, man. Yeah, like, that's the kind of stuff I'm like, man, that's really wild. I mean, Jenny Lin's an example. You know, you watch her talk about your offer and you're like, and she just makes you question, like, you're like, what am I doing with my life? You're like, that is a shitty offer we have, you know? And so that's the kind of thing that I mean. It's like the constant bringing in of new ideas from people. Because I think there's also that idea that if you're going to join a community that's around collective learning, you're a person that's intellectually curious by nature. That's you're not coming in and saying, I've only had one time a guy came in and he goes, I've been in the founders membership a month. I know all this, so I'm going to leave. And I was like,
oh, great.
Awesome. I will speak to you never. I was like, good luck. Like, I wish you luck, you know?
Best of luck.
Like, I'm not trying to get any bad blood in the world. Wow. But mostly the people that are in there, the regular people, it's like that curiosity that drives us forward. And that's really what's inspiring to me, is that the people that I look to that I'm like, yo, they're so good and I'm so glad that I'm learning from them.
Yeah.
They're asking questions.
Yeah.
Have you seen this? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
And that makes me feel more like, whew, okay, cool. They're asking it too, because I think we all deal with imposter syndrome all the time in this. It's like, it's natural in doing this work. And so I think that if it's a place that can help you feel more validated, help you feel like you're, you know, learning and that you're able to ask in a vulnerable way, that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah. That imposter syndrome is massive. I mean, we've a couple of people I was talking to yesterday, we were talking and they were saying like, I'm seeing all these amazing talks, amazing words being said and strategies given, and I have nothing. I'm just talking about what's on the, it's amazing. The humility that we're seeing in there is fantastic. Can we talk about cost caps?
What the fuck?
No. But there's this whole movement at the moment to be like, let's do cost caps.
You turn off your notifications. Turn off your Twitter notifications.
There's that block button, not block button, that mute button for certain words. If someone mentions cost caps.
Yeah.
Don't you have like AI on everything? Block it.
Yeah. Why? So Andrew, why? Why are people doing this? Why are people going for cost caps?
I mean, I think there's always a validity to keeping, you know, costs reined in and having cost controls on. I think that there's more predictability to them than there was before. I think that it's still not something that I think you want to do 100% of the time, personally.
For sure.
I think that we did see a new member that joined, and he's transitioned 100% to cost caps with target ROAS.
Does he wake up at 5 a.m. and take ice baths every day? Yeah, yeah.
And he, and but I learned recently that I think he's spending like north of $500K a month.
Woo!
So, there, you know, these are the things that you have to kind of understand about that there's a volume to it as well, right? Like if you're going to be doing these, if you're going to be doing cost caps, you're going to be doing really kind of like limiters on the account. If you're at a certain level, it's okay if it goes from 10K down to, you know, or from, you know, 100K down to 10K to 60K. You know, you kind of have to accept that inherent volatility almost to it. And it's a different way of going about things. And it also obviously works when you have like creative winners. Yeah. So it's sort of like you have to be at a certain stage to be thinking about this longer term.
Yeah.
So the thing that I think we get into is, there's very little that differentiates us as advertisers sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you look at it and say, oh, they, you know, these agencies look largely the same. And I think that cost caps is an example of something that people utilize as like a sales tactic. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is everyone, but I do think this is like a decently common thing that people will say like, oh, well, you know, we have this secret sauce that you don't know about.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And I think the people that are real cost cap maxis would say like, no, like we just know they work. And I think that if they haven't worked for you, you're doing it wrong. Okay. And so
this back to that ego thing though, right?
Cause yeah, it comes. And so to me, it's always
mute, Twitter mute.
To me, it's always like, it's a thing of, I'm not saying it's an invalid idea. I'm not saying I probably wouldn't switch everything entirely onto it. The reason that Zach is doing it is because they're not in a scaling portion of their business because they're holding inventory.
I think you just name dropped it. And that's so, okay.
Oh, no, yeah.
He says on Twitter.
Yeah, he said it on Twitter. Okay, so Zach Suck, who's actually like literally one of my best friends, actually, he went on and said, I'm going to try these because it's something I've seen and we are holding inventory for Q4. And so we don't want to do like a ton, but we want to see if we can control costs, keep margin up in what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great time to give it a shot, right? I think anybody giving things a try is never a bad idea. I think the cost cap thing is really interesting because it's sort of like this white hot topic, this discussion, and it seems to bring up a lot of like passionate feelings, obviously.
Go. But what's the context? Like, so look, you talk about context, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're spending 20K and under. Cost cap?
No, I wouldn't say so. No, because you're really looking at a volume play.
Okay. What's the volume though? Like generally when you're seeing it.
I mean, to me, like if you're going to be spending spending 50K, north of 50K a month, like I think looking at a campaign, maybe one that's cost capped, I think is like a legitimate idea.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely validity in that. Maybe you're going to cost cap the whole campaign or everything, you know, over time, you're going to transition into that. Really what you have to get used to is you have to get used to, like I said, a day where it doesn't spend anything. Right. And then a day where it spends the entire budget. Yeah. You also have to be really weary because there are, I mean, at least from what I, like a couple times when we've seen personally, I've seen it personally on our accounts. And then from like the community, a dozen other times where people have been days in the last, let's just even say like 4 months where cost caps just, Facebook just forgot about them for the day.
Yeah.
so then you have it because a lot of it is that you're having the campaign budgets at these really high budgets because if it's really good, you want it to be that.
Right.
And so then they'll just spend through a whole budget of 10K by 9 a.m. or something. Ooh. And then you're totally screwed. So I think this is one of those things of like we talked about before with Zuck, like you want it to work that way, but it just doesn't 100% yet.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's another piece about it. So I guess my feeling is that generally they're on the table because there's a lot of people that are utilizing this as a sales technique to make it seem like there's something that they have that you don't.
Yeah.
I think that there's also people that are pushing it that have seen it work over time and really believe in the meta system and believe that it is the most profitable thing to do and have seen it repeatable in accounts. And they're talking about it because they're evangelizing it because they think it's really a great way to control costs and make businesses more profitable. And I think there's validity in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I also think that there's people that have tried it and it hasn't worked and they've tried it again and again and it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And they've tried to raise it up by 10% or by 15% a day or every 72 hours or whatever. And it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's all of these things are true. So my point is that if you are having a situation where you're not scaling profitably and you're spending $50K a month or more, mm-hmm. is it a valid idea to try them? Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Why not? Absolutely. Would I try a cost control for the first time during Q4? I probably would not.
No.
Because I would rather get a lot of volume through
this. Please don't. Please don't. Yeah. Don't.
But like, you know, is it if you want to control costs mm-hmm. during Q4 and make margins better and make sure that your CPA doesn't go above a certain amount, that's a valid argument, and that could be something that you'd want to try. But you are, again, largely going to be sacrificing volume for the most part. So it depends on you having creative winners. It depends on you having a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah.
It's not just like an easy fix.
Yeah.
So I think it's like yes and no.
Yeah. I think Jake Thompson does a good talk about it in the founders group. I think what he talks about is, again, that making sure you have constant winners. And if you don't have constant winners, it's kind of like you gotta have the right tools to be able to do that particular job. You can't just compare lowest cost to cost caps. You have to have the consistent winners. You have to have the consistent testing and everything else that will allow you to kind of see. It allow you to do it. You can't just go, oh, I'm going to turn this on, it's going to work. You can't expect that. You have to have testing. Have done your tests in lowest cost. You have to have done your tests in ABO.
Yeah,
making sure that they work there, and then bring that stuff in. That's really your kind of is where you gotta go with it.
I mean, it's just a funny, honestly, like I'm just gonna go off on this really briefly, but like it's just a continuation of, in my opinion, this kind of stuff, these little things that are just driven largely by people talking about complicated shit or talking about things that are actually simple and making them seem complicated to confuse people, to make them become dependent upon you and your content to explain it to them. Mm. And that is just a really, it's so frustrating to me, because it's like, I think if you're going to be speaking about stuff, like make it easy to read, make it public or not just public, but like, it doesn't have to be so complicated. It doesn't have to be that way.
I
don't know. But like, then again, like also we have a membership and I'm like, you know, if you want the real insights, come inside the Foxville Founders. So like, true. I guess I'm doing it too. I mean,
no, it's true.
Just like in reality, but like, I try to not be like holding like this is a secret sauce, like it's the membership's a secret sauce for you. Well, the membership really gives you like a diverse set of perspectives you can learn from, and really a safe place that you can come in and ask questions, not be flamed for asking that question on X. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of people have said that's the reason that they joined.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a difference there, and I think in order to continue to actually evolve and like bring more people in, like I talked about earlier, and involve the industry properly, which is, I think, some of the duty that we have, doing this kind of like making people feel dumb type thing is just not a useful thing for us to be doing.
I don't think it's good.
And I don't think that it really helps us overall, because it really keeps people out. It's like the other day I tried to go rent the bike from Rafa Cycling Club and they didn't include the pedals or a helmet on a bike rental because they're like, well, if you're a hardcore cyclist, you're going to bring your own pedals.
Of course.
It's like, this is dumb. This is stupid. Like, make it accessible. You know what I mean? Like, you know, which is why a lot of times, like, we take the best stuff from the founders membership and turn them into blogs.
Yeah.
Because we wanted that to be out there. So, I mean, obviously I'm struggling with that too. We're a little bit in that case, but I really try not to be like overly declarative about mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a big part of it. So anyway, okay. It's been more transparent than I thought I would be.
All right, guys, that is a wrap. We talked with the guy, with the man himself, Mr. Andrew Foxhole, the man with the biggest mic. We talked about Q4. We had a couple of hot takes, a couple of intro, looking inside what to do to keep yourself sane for Q4. I'm Edwin.
I'm Tris.
And I'm the big cheese.
Thanks, guys.
See you on the next one.
So there you go, a sample episode of the fantastic Founders Forum podcast. If you like the kind of depth of information that you get in there, and honestly, I don't think you can get that kind of information really on any other podcast, including ours, just look for Founders Forum podcast. And if you're interested in Andrew's Foxwell Founders community, go to todayindigital.com/founders. That's our affiliate link. We have been in there since the inception of the group. All right, that'll do it for the week. I'll be back on Monday with a special deep dive science episode about how Schadenfreude can be used in your marketing. Today in Digital Marketing is produced by Engage Q Digital on the traditional territories of the Snoqualmie First Nation on Vancouver Island. Our associate producer is the intrepid Steph Gunn. Our production coordinator is Sarah Guild. Our director of crazy is Mark Blevis. I'm Todd Maffin. Have a restful weekend, and I will see you on Monday.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.